we are once again, Dumb and Dumber for a Tuesday.
Speak for yourself.
You're dumber. I don't know.
So you're saying there's still a chance.
Yeah, well, I'm acknowledging dumb. We're going to get to hockey, and we're going to regurgitate the trade deadline stuff.
Yes, yes.
Big whoop. But Jamal Murray is out for an extended period of time with an Achilles, I think. Wow. And while that is devastating to Denver and their playoff aspirations, it is equally devastating to the Canadian Olympic team.
And Basketball Canada.
And to Basketball Canada. And John and I were just chatting about it before we got on air. And I said, you know, 2 years ago, this would have been a story, but it wouldn't have been a big story. Now it's, I mean, is there a guy that Canada basketball, that they would think is more important than him?
I think he became, in the last 14 months, Bob, I think he became the focal point of our national team.
I agree.
And you know, we saw it in the NBA bubble last year, how good he was. We saw it, well, we saw it even before that, but we really got the focus on him. He took that Denver team to heights that I don't think a lot of people expected him to, and he was doing the same this year. And to know that that you know, at the Olympics this summer, he won't be there, and he won't, you know, he doesn't have a chance. And hear me out, to actually be better than Steve Nash was in Sydney, Australia, because Steve Nash—that's the measure of Canadian basketball. How well, good you could and Murray. Yeah, Murray could have been at that level.
We want to change gears. We're going to bring in a couple of our Mike friends, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com. Reflections on the day after the trade deadline. Who won? Who lost? Who tied?
Who cares?
It's the NHL. Somebody always ties. Back after these messages. Well, by the end of today, the four people on this program today will all have received their first dose of vaccine, which tells you more about our age than it does about the relative significance of our profiles.
I thought you were going to say that by the end of the day, we're going to start about next year's trade deadline, because I know you love it so much.
Well, I'm hopeful that at least two or three trades take place today in advance of next year, so that TSN and Sportsnet get even more screwed than they did this year.
Oh.
But I can't promise that. Joining us from Buffalo, New York, Mike Harrington of the News, and Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com. All kinds of places we can go with this. But was anybody surprised with any of the moves in terms of their significance? I have billed this thing on an annual basis for I don't know how many years as much ado about nothing, a bunch of fourth liners for other fourth liners or 10th round draft picks. Yeah, there were a few players that you've heard of, but was there one deal that surprised you, that was significant, a player that moved that you didn't think would? Harrington, to you first.
The last deal, Anthony Mantha going from Detroit to Washington for Vrana and Panik was a significant move for the Capitals, gives them, you know, more currency up front. And it's a guy who's been on a losing team who the Red Wings now get a couple pieces and some picks for. That might turn into the most significant move, because what we saw in the East Division was an arms race. The Islanders making big moves, the Bruins getting Taylor Hall. So the Capitals had to make a move. The Penguins getting Jeff Carter. The East Division, really, everybody went for it.
Z?
Well, you know, Mike, I agree with you, except for the fact that they paid a king's ransom.
They did.
And I got to say, we always do these every time there's a trade deadline, winners and losers. And although I do think that Mantha will help the Washington Capitals, I think one of the big winners is Steve Yzerman for what the return that he got for a player, and Anthony Mantha, that obviously he had signed him to a long-term deal. But there's questions in the Red Wings organization as to how consistent he is. To get two players back, plus a first and second round pick, when, and I'm sorry, Mike, but you knew we were going to circle back to this. The Buffalo Sabres couldn't even get a first rounder for Taylor Hall. I understand that Mantha is a signed player, but I as much as it helps the Capitals, Stevie Yzerman came out looking and smelling like a rose yesterday.
You know, I don't think there should be any surprise about that. You know, let's remember when Yzerman first went to Tampa, it took him 18 months to feel his oats and understand what kind of players he had. Next thing you know, Le Cavalier's gone. Next thing you know, Saint-Louis is going to be moved. After that, I mean, he only has a certain amount of patience for people. And Jonathan Drouin, he grew impatient with Jonathan Drouin as well as Drouin grew impatient with the organization. And there were rumblings that he had grown impatient with Mantha, particularly Mike, after he did give him the contract. There was an expectation. Remember, this guy scored, if memory serves me, 65 goals in junior hockey. He's 6'5". He has every tool in the toolbox to be a great player, except what's between the ears. And obviously, Yzerman, who has a great judgment of these types of things, felt it was time to do something. I got to think from a Washington perspective, and Brian McClellan, you know, Mike, you're right. Mike Harrington, you're correct. I mean, everybody around him improved. The Rangers didn't improve, but the Rangers scare the heck out of Washington every time they play. Sure. So what had to happen was Brian McClellan had to do something. And now you got to hope, and they did get Michael Raffle too, but now you got to hope that Zdeno Chara, with his professionalism, and Alex Ovechkin, with his enthusiasm, rub off on Mantha. Because if that's the case, and it does, if that occurs, then the Mantha deal could be a great deal for Washington in the short term. But I'll tell you what, I got to see it before I believe it.
Here's the thing too, John, when you talk about short term versus long term, what Brian McClellan is facing right now is what Jimmy Rutherford, when he was in Pittsburgh, would always preach. He said, I have two generational players in Malkin and Crosby, and you have to take advantage of that window. And if it means overpaying to bring guys around them, their supporting cast, that's what you do. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, although Alex Ovechkin, the way that he's going, he might go till 60. But, you know, realistically, when you look at Ovechkin and you look at Backstrom, guys like that, there is a limited window of their opportunity. And I think that's the way he looked at it in terms of giving away or exchanging the assets that he did to get gratification for right now.
And Washington has only won one cup. The window's still wide open. The Penguins won three cups. The Islanders haven't won of this group yet. And the Bruins have won one cup, and the Bruins window might be closing the most of all here as they're trying to retool with some of their young players. So you're right. You have to strike when the moment is hot. We learned that in Buffalo in 06 and 07. They didn't get over the hump. And I think that's exactly what Washington is doing. They're trying to squeeze another cup out of this group. And that's one reason I think they brought in Chara to help out the back end there. And the Bruins, for the record, really missed Chara and probably missed the boat on that. He wasn't nearly as washed up as they thought. Yeah.
Hey, Mike Harrington, do you think Taylor Hall can help Boston?
You know, I think one of the things with Taylor Hall is he was a little snake bit here. He's not the same player he was. He's not going to shoot 2.3% in Boston. He'll probably score three goals against the Sabres the first or second night out, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to be a second-line guy in Boston, and I think that's what he said in his call was he doesn't have to be a focal point guy anymore. In Buffalo, he was behind Eichel, but he was still a pretty high focal point. You don't have to be that in Boston when you have Pasternak and Bergeron and Marchand, and I think that really suits him at this point is in his career right now, and I think there'll be some pressure taken off because of all the crises that was going on in Buffalo. And, you know, he's going to be expected to produce in Boston, but it's a reasonable chance. It's a rental. The Bruins certainly didn't give up a lot. So I think Taylor Hall is going to feel a little rejuvenation here playing for the Bruins.
Well, you guys alluded earlier to what Buffalo was initially asking for him, which was a first rounder minimum, which they did not get. But did anybody think that realistically they would get that?
There was hope. But I think there was reality not. The bottom line here for everything is that Taylor Hall had two goals. If Taylor Hall had 12 goals, the Buffalo Sabres probably get a first round pick from the Boston Bruins or somebody else.
I don't doubt that.
You know, and the other problem is we kind of got the sense yesterday, and we got the information that really kind of crystallized everything, was that Taylor Hall's no move clause was largely an outgrowth because he almost signed with the Boston Bruins in the fall. And then he said, well, a few things didn't come together for me. Well, a few things that didn't come together was that Pegulas paid him more money and got him to $8 million. And Kevin Adams said, we'll give you no move clause. So essentially, Taylor Hall was able to drive his own bus, and he made it pretty clear that he wanted to go to Boston. So the Sabres could not really pit a lot of teams against each other. And when Vegas reportedly came in very late, Taylor Hall was already down the road saying, I want to go to Boston. So they were kind of stuck, you know, and I think Don Sweeney had to be laughing behind his breath here because he knew he really had a good situation. And even this, I look at it though, second round pick, they take Anders Bjork for Curtis Lazar. So they take a bottom six player who's twice as expensive, whose contract is twice as long. They retain half of Taylor Hall's money. What's in it for me? Kevin Adams really got stuck on this one.
Well, in fact, I think that the difference in getting the deal done in Boston was the fact that Washington beat the Bruins so badly on the weekend, 8-1, that I think Don Sweeney upped the offer from a third round pick to a second round pick.
Oh, can you imagine? Imagine what would have said in Buffalo if all we got was a third round pick for Taylor Hall. I mean, I'm just not big on draft picks anyway. I understand you have to build to them, but this is not the NFL. We've seen the Buffalo Bills essentially drafted themselves out of trouble in the NFL in 2017 and 2018. I remind people all the time, you cannot draft yourself out of trouble in the NHL because your picks are for 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road. So second round picks don't do a lot for me. I think the biggest thing to watch here is Kevin Adams has 10 draft picks. Can he put some sort of package together going forward with a couple picks, another prospect, whatever, to get back into that first round to get another pick? I really think that's their long-term play.
Just let him win the lottery. Let him win the lottery, please.
It doesn't matter this year. Really, it doesn't matter. There's no McDavid. There's no Lafreniere. I'm not necessarily of the school that it matters if Buffalo gets 1, 2, or 3 this year. It's not that kind of year.
I do know this, Harrington. If they would have got a third-round pick for him, you wouldn't have needed COVID vaccine. You'd have needed heart medication, okay, because you would have snapped. I mean, we were texting the night of the Hall trade, and I could feel the anger oozing through my phone, okay? And you know what? I mean, I now we know, you know, that was before we knew the way that Hall had kind of painted them into a corner. So it makes a little more sense, but I mean, you see the outrage for a second round pick, a third, if they would have had to settle for a third, you know, and here's the other thing. Yes, he wanted to go there. You know, we heard teams like Washington were interested in him too. I mean, I got to think that Washington, if they, given what they gave up again for a guy that signed in Mantha, but, you know, I would have thought they would have jumped in and said, here is a second round pick. We'll throw a fourth in there for you as well.
Well, let me ask both of you guys. Would you rather have Taylor Hall or Anthony Mantha? Harrington.
You know, having seen Taylor Hall this year and see the way he played and see even last year, you wonder how much his game has eroded in the wake of his knee injury. He's not nearly the player he was in the Hart Trophy year. At this point, I would rather have Anthony Mantha. You know, we know Taylor Hall has been a losing player in terms of his team most of his career. Let's see if Anthony Mantha gets rejuvenated a little bit on a Washington Capitals team that's a winner.
Zeiss?
It depends on what team you're on. I think if I'm Boston, I've got big bodies in that. I think they needed another skill player up front behind that first line. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm the Boston Bruins right now, I think I would want Taylor Hall more just because, you know, better skater. I know he doesn't have the production, but to Mike's point earlier, you know, he doesn't have to be the guy there. And when I think of Taylor Hall, I kind of think related to Phil Kessel, where in Toronto, the spotlight was on him. He was kind of looked at as being one of the guys. That's not his makeup. But when he got traded to Pittsburgh, all of a sudden I thought, this is going to be a great fit because you have Crosby, you've got Malkin. Even dealing with the media after the game, Marc-Andre Fleury was there. And I mean, he just goes on and on and on. He's one of the most wonderful interviews in sports. So Kessel could just do what he did. And he ended up winning a couple of cups. So
yes, but
I think it's horses for courses.
The point of difference there in your analysis is that Kessel performed for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He produced for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And in Hall, you've got a guy who hasn't performed for a few years, for you know, and has been underperforming arguably his entire career. Has he had a year that you could say he met or exceeded the expectation? One?
One.
2018, when he won the Hart Trophy in 2018.
The Hart Trophy.
You're right.
And his only play and his only playoff appearance in his career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until in his last career. Until last year at Arizona. That was it.
That's right. I think we called those postseason. We didn't call those playoffs. Right. I'm not giving him credit for taking them to the bubble. I'm not. I'm sorry.
Well, the funny thing about all of this really is how even Taylor Hall got saberized. I mean, did anybody think that was a bad move? At the time, a one-year gamble, $8 million. You might have thought it wasn't going to work, but he was either going to play well and sign, or he was going to be traded, and you're probably going to get a good return for him because he was going to be the top guy at the deadline. So it was a good roll of the dice, but like everything else in Buffalo, it just didn't work, and he got saberized. He suddenly couldn't put the puck in the net. He tripped over the blue line on a breakaway in Long Island, and he's in blooper reels forever. And that's the kind of things that happen in Buffalo.
It was worth.
By the way,
I'll give you that.
Well,
didn't material.
Bob, I think they should. We should call up the Webster's people and have that word put into the dictionary.
Saberized. That's good. I got to admit, Mike, I have never heard that before. Saberized. I'm using it from now on. I'm stealing it. You're not getting credit for it either.
It's been my trademark for a while. I've seen a lot in the last 10 years. Let me tell you.
No team was busier, I don't think. At the deadline and the deals that were done just ahead of the deadline than the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Dylan Dubas.
Which is really an intriguing thing for me, and I want to delve into this because that is the kind of thing usually you do if you are in, a bad team looking to unload a bunch of dead meat. Or you're a team that hopes to be good, but knows that you need more than one fix. The Toronto Maple Leafs arguably are as good a playoff bet as any based on their regular season performance. I could have made the argument that this is a perfect team that shouldn't make any deals. Don't mess it up. It's not really broken. You could argue they wanted a goaltender. Did they need another goaltender? Well, that remains to be seen. But they didn't go out and get a sure number one. They went out and got a number two, who might even wind up being a number three. But they made, they got six or seven new players? Does this make sense to you? Zeisberger, you're closer to the Maple Leafs probably than anybody else here. Does this make sense?
Yeah, definitely. I give Kyle Dubas credit because he took a lot of heat after the loss to Columbus in the qualifiers last year, and rightly so. Bob, you said based on their regular season, they should be a good bet as any in the playoffs, except this is a team that hasn't won a playoff series in 2004 with the core that they had. Going into the trade deadline, and we can get to the other players in a moment, but to me, when Nick Foligno's name came up in rumors and scuttlebutt and forthwith, I just sat there and said, A, why would Columbus ever trade this guy? And B, this guy has to be so far at the top of the Toronto Maple Leafs list because he is something that they do not have. And that's, no offense to guys like Thornton and Simmons and that, but he and Pierre-Luc Dubois, almost single-handedly in terms of forwards, beat the Toronto Maple Leafs, in my opinion, in that qualifier. This guy is a heart and soul guy. You go into a playoff series, nobody is going to want to play him, which was evident by the fact that the team that he joined didn't have an answer for him. So I think when they look at it, you know, they've gone from being a young team to an experienced team. I have no problem with them going out and getting a goalie, because they look at what happened to Colorado last year, where that team, arguably to me, along with Tampa, were the two most, and still are, the two most talented teams in the league. But they ended up having to go to a game seven with Michael Hutchison, who now gets bumped back to number four on the Toronto depth chart. So I understand what they did there. But to me, you know, the other players are depth players. But the fact that they got Nick Foligno, for once, a team addressed its biggest need with the best player to fit it. And, you know, I it may not work out, but kudos to them for going out and getting them.
You know, and you have to think, too, what's Kyle Dubas doing? To me, the Leafs are head and shoulders favorite to come out of their division. They're thinking right now, how are we going to do in the third round? How are we going to win a Stanley
Cup? Third round?
Yes,
because they haven't won anything since 2004. Let's get through the first one first.
And if they don't win the two series this year, a lot of heads are going to roll. They're head and shoulders the best team in that division, as long as the goaltending doesn't all pull hamstrings. Mm-hmm. But they're thinking Stanley Cup this year, even though they haven't won a series.
Yeah, I think they are.
How are we going to do against Vegas or Tampa or whoever else we might see? And we better have a deeper, grittier, more all-encompassing, talented team. And that's what they did. And I love what they did.
Yeah, I think the real key is the Maple Leafs wanted to make sure that they would have 20 healthy skaters for the third round. And you know, a guy like Ben Hutton, who comes from Anaheim for a low pick, may never play a game here. And if they stay healthy, he may never dress for a game for the Maple Leafs. And he will sit in the press box or the taxi squad, or now that the rosters are expanded, just sit and practice. And just as an insurance policy, David Rittich, the backup goalie from Calgary, really, his value is really only in the 16 games rest of the regular season.
Yeah. Yep.
Because Freddie Anderson will be back healthy, whether starting or backing up Jack Campbell, you know, so in the end,
you're sure this of that?
Yes, I am. That was three yeses, Bob. but here's the thing. If he's not, then there comes David Rittich. And David Rittich sits on the bench. You know, I mean, was it cap circumvention? Sure, it was cap circumvention. They did a magnificent job. The guy who designed the cap, Brandon Pridham, you know, is the capologist for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He understands every nook and cranny of the CBA and how to use it. And they used it to the advantage. Brian Burke used to bitch and complain. Why don't you let us? Yeah, that's right. Brian used to complain that you don't let people buy and sell cap space. Well, this is what the teams have now learned how to do, is buy and sell cap space. And the value of a fourth round pick is $400,000 of cap space, which is what I think Stevie Yzerman got in the Savard deal. You know, so they have found another loophole in Gary and Bill's master plan to try to control spending, and still teams that have a bit of money, because there's lots of teams that have no money right now, none. But the Maple Leafs come from a big company that will still allow you to spend. And they found a way to use it. And I don't think it's a bad thing. They're not a lock to go to the third round, though. You know, there's going to be two teams that are going to bump them and bruise them and through the first two rounds, particularly Winnipeg, I think. And so it's going to be fascinating to see if they can get to the third round. But if they do, they'll be healthy enough to play.
Well, but Winnipeg did very little at the deadline.
Not trying, Bob. They really did try to improve. They tried to get David Savard. They tried to get Nidavara out of Columbus. It just didn't work.
Well, it didn't work because they weren't prepared to take the gamble, I guess.
Right.
I mean, it comes down to that.
Look what Tampa paid for David Savard. That's the thing. They paid the premium.
Well, again, it goes back to windows opening and closing. What's the window? Now, the other thing is they do have a pretty good player coming off of IR, amazingly just in time for the playoffs in Tampa.
that may be the best trade deadline addition of all, right?
Nikita Kucherov. But but their window is going to close a lot sooner, I think, than people realize. And Julien Brisebois understands that better than anybody.
Let's take a break, and we'll come back and address some of the other things that happened or did not happen, and the strengths and weaknesses of what the NHL looks like today. We'll take the break and return after these messages. With Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News and Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com. It's McCowan, it's Shannon, as we regurgitate.
Last time, Bob.
What do you mean last time?
We're not going to do it again this week.
Well, I can assure you we're not going to do it
again. I don't want to hear about the trade deadline until next year. It's in Buffalo. Yep. All we hear about is who you're selling. So let's wait another year for this.
This is my gift to you today, Shannon, you hockey puck, you. Although I love to chat with these two gentlemen at any time, but I'd rather be talking about anything but the trade deadline. Still with the Canadian division. Moves by Vancouver and Calgary specifically. Were they exclusively white flags?
Calgary was.
Sure.
Calgary was a white flag. I think if you talk to people inside the organization, and that there's now a real understanding that we're on the verge, particularly in the summertime, of watching an NHL team have to retool in so many ways, because they got rid of, getting rid of Sam Bennett, getting rid of their number two goalie. They weren't going to be Flames long-term anyway. They were going to lose them in the summer. But this was also a shot across the bow of guys like Goodrow and Monahan to, hey, you know what, changes are coming.
Well, and those two seem, well, do both of them seem likely to go in the offseason? Johnny Goodrow has been talked about over and over and over again, and it's been kind of quiet about Monahan. What do you think, Z?
Well, I think you used the right word, quiet and Monahan together. You know, he's reached a certain level, but I think Calgary looked at their core and Monahan, Goodrow, and then obviously Giordano at the back end. And you know, that's why they went out and got a Tanev, Bob. That's why they went out and got a Markstrom, and they really thought they had a shot. Maybe Johnny Goodrow and Sean Monahan are what we see of them now, okay? They show flashes. They tease you. But there's just a lack of consistency. So it depends on what the return is for either of those players. But it would not surprise me. I mean, if Brad Treliving can get a half decent return for those guys, like Shanny said, they may have to blow up the whole thing. I mean, Giordano's, approaching his late 30s as well. I actually think that Treliving has been more patient than a lot of people wanted him to be with this core. And if you watched his press conference yesterday, you could see him kind of sapped of energy. And he said, you know what? He used the word. He said, I don't really want to use this word, but there's no better word. It sucks when you have to send guys that have played for you that long. It sucks to have to trade them away. Well, you know what? I think it's going to suck even more for Treliving, because I think he's got to move some of these guys and hit the reset button.
Adaptive energy. That's exactly what I saw his eyes. And you think of this division, it's really fascinating to me. Ottawa's the young team, really coming with the prospects. The Leafs and Edmonton at the top. Winnipeg, really promising. And then everybody else, the other three, you're kind of wondering. Calgary and Vancouver really seem stuck in the mud. Montreal's trying, but they're just not good enough. Mm-hmm. But Calgary and Vancouver right now are in a bad spot. When you're in the middle and you're not really terrible and you're not pushing for the top, you've got to really make some hard decisions about where you're going with your team.
And let me say this
about Vancouver. I think they're in a different position, Mike, in terms of the fact that in goal with Thatcher Demko, on the blue line with Quinn Hughes, and then up front with Horvat and Pettersson, at least you have a core of under 25 players that if you want to get rid of the peripheral guys and rebuild around them, at least you have the core. Which you young get them guys signed. In Calgary do you look at and say, okay, these are franchise guys, they're young, we can build around them? I don't see it there.
That's you better get Pettersson and Hughes signed. Right. Yep. And the other thing with Pettersson, you better be concerned that he's a little more durable in the future than he has been the last couple of years. Let me throw this at you. Would you ever believe that Matthew Tkachuk was the second best Tkachuk playing in Canada? Because a lot of what has reflected in Calgary, he's been a barometer of that hockey club. Mm-hmm. You know, we can talk Goodrow, we can talk Monahan. Matthew Tkachuk has been a major disappointment for them this year.
Yeah.
Brady Tkachuk, on the other hand, is just a fire. I mean, I think there's the Brady Tkachuk fan club is growing every day. The Matthew Tkachuk fan club, it might have lost a few secret Dakota rings.
And this is something that's going on in Buffalo. You have an eye to next season. If the league reverts back to its old arrangement, which we don't know because of the virus, Buffalo's got to keep its eye on Ottawa and Detroit, teams that are young and building and doing some things. And they're, you know, have to play catch up to them too, even though they're getting killed in the East Division this year. So Ottawa's really a team that jumps out at you. And people in Buffalo are watching going, they got a lot of prospects and they're really on the move here. We might have a problem.
Well, the team we haven't mentioned here, really to any extent, is the Edmonton Oilers. And you can make the argument, I think we all probably would, that Toronto's the favorite in the North Canadian, whatever the hell division it's called. But you wouldn't be shocked if Winnipeg beat them, if Winnipeg emerged. How shocked would we be if Edmonton came out of here? I wouldn't be all that surprised. And they did relatively nothing. Shannon, you just spent a week in Edmonton. Why?
Yeah. Well, first of all, why did I spend a week
there? Oh. Why didn't they do anything?
Well, because this is not their year yet. And it's not their year because they are so cap and cash conscious right now. Their year is next year. And Kenny Holland knew he had to make a couple of tweaks. He knew he had to improve his blue line. Not much different than what occurred in Winnipeg with the blue line. Winnipeg wasn't going to take Kulikov back anyway. But Dmitry Kulikov will allow the younger Oiler defenseman to get a bit more experience before they throw him into the number two pair. But they didn't address a need for goal scoring. They still need goal scoring other than those two guys. And that's going to be an issue. And we've seen that a couple of times, particularly against Montreal and against Calgary. So from that perspective, I would just say that under the circumstances of a tight cap and what's going on and they have to sign a few guys, this just wasn't the time for the Oilers to go all in at the deadline like Toronto or Washington did. It might be their turn next year.
They're a step behind Toronto, Winnipeg. Sorry, John. It just comes down to make a save. The Edmonton Oilers just are not going to make enough saves and goal, I don't think, to last long enough in the playoffs. And I think
Mike Smith's done an amazing job, but you have to wonder at which point does he break.
Right.
Well, you remember last year, John, in the play-ins against Chicago, as good as their goaltenders could have looked in the regular season, like we said earlier in the podcast, playoffs are a different animal, and their goaltending got exposed in the playoffs. But having said that, do I think the Oilers are going to win the cup? No. Could they come out of the North Division? Very much so. And I think the one thing, I mean, you know, McDavid and Dreisaitl, I mean, they speak for themselves. I think they can win a team a game on any night. But, you know, Kenny Holland's got to be pretty pleased with the way that Darnell Nurse has developed and taken that next step this year to be kind of the number one defenseman that they've been looking for, I mean, ever since McDavid got there. And that's the thing, to your point, that I think they are getting close. Mm-hmm. And by next year, Kenny Holland can fit in those pieces.
Well, I mean, not only Darnell Nurse, but I mean, they dragged Tyson Barrie out of the Toronto scrap heap, and Tyson Barrie has played very well for them. Mm-hmm. And the guy they traded Taylor Hall for is going to get a new long-term deal in Edmonton. And Adam Larson has been a horse all year for them. So the interesting thing is and I'm going to get all the Montreal Canadian fans mad at me. I'm going to throw Montreal aside as the number four team in the division. But Toronto, Winnipeg, and Edmonton have been staring at each other and saying, okay, Winnipeg's deeper at the forwards. We need to be better. That's what Kyle tried to address. Winnipeg has said, we need to have a better blue line in order to try to compete against the Maple Leafs and the Oilers in the playoffs, because their forwards are going to come down on our D. Everybody has been trying to retool and improve themselves just for those first two rounds, because they do know that, man, one of us is going to get to the Stanley Cup semifinal. One of us is. There's going to be a Canadian team in round three, and everyone is trying to say, I want it to be me more than anything else.
So much is about fit with players, too. You look at, I mean, Tyson Barrie was just not a good fit in Toronto. He's been a much better fit in Edmonton. Look at how TJ Brody has helped the Leafs. I mean, fit is everything for players. And it's sometimes, for a variety of reasons, it just doesn't work. And wouldn't the Leafs have wanted Tyson Barrie to look like he looks this year, last year? It just didn't happen.
Yeah. Listen, to Tyson, to the point about Tyson Barrie, he said, you know, when he signed with Edmonton, that, you know, mentioned about the negative Toronto media, and I immediately blamed Bob and Shanny.
Oh no, we're members of the Tyson Barrie fan club. Come on now. We were the only guys protecting Tyson.
Bob's just a nobody member could, of no fan club.
No, but nobody was listening.
I don't belong to any fan clubs, and I don't belong to the media anymore. So anybody who wants to take a shot at me, fire away.
It's all those people you follow on Twitter. Bob,
you'll miss by miles. The intriguing thing still comes down to this, and I know we're going to talk about it in the coming weeks, but we sit here and as we have here, and we can forge opinions about any team based upon what their play against six or seven other teams, and we have absolutely no clue what any of those teams will look like once they get to the Stanley Cup semifinal, because they're all going to be in the same boat. They're all going to play within their division until the final four. And then all of a sudden, it's going to be a coin flip, because there's going to be no relevant data, really. I mean, nothing really is relevant. You know, you can look at goal scoring. You can look at goaltender performance. You can look at all kinds of things that we've looked at for years and years and years as points of relevance. Many times they don't materialize, but points of relevance leading to the playoffs. What does any of that mean this year?
I think there's only one relevant thing by the third round, Bob. This year, particularly.
Health.
Yeah.
Because matchups, you know, you always look back, how did we do against this team this year? No one will have played each other.
No.
You're going to get to the Stanley Cup semifinals, and you're guaranteed to have a matchup where the last time these teams met, if it's possible, was March of 2020. And it could have been October or November of 2019.
It could have been.
You know, so that's really going to be interesting to me. And you could have the cross-pollination of things. What if the third round is Toronto and Vegas, for instance? You could have East-West in the third round, not at the end this year. So it's really going to be interesting. It's going to almost be like the old days of baseball. Two teams met who've never played before, and all of a sudden they're playing in the most important series. That's going to happen in the NHL starting.
Well, and particularly if the Maple Leafs are playing in Buffalo, Mike. Just like the baseball team's going to be playing in Buffalo, the hockey team could be playing in Buffalo.
Going to be a busy time in Buffalo starting in about June, I think. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I've had that thought that, you know, how are things going to work out here? Are they going to match up Winnipeg with Minnesota and the Leafs in Buffalo? I mean, it might happen. I even wrote a whole column. Hey, Sabres fans, your biggest nightmare could happen. What if the Leafs won the Stanley Cup? What if they won it in Buffalo, of all places? I got a little response from that one. Let's put it
the ghost of Punch Imlach.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when push comes to shove, it's easy for Buffalo fans to hate Toronto teams. We get that. That's normal.
They hate the Leafs. They don't hate,
so they hate the Leafs.
Yeah.
But if the Leafs move in to your arena for the Stanley Cup semifinal, does that hatred continue?
Oh yeah.
Or do you adopt them?
No, not a chance.
No chance.
So the concept of selling 15% of the arena to hockey fans to cheer for the visiting team.
Well, I think the one thing is, believe it or not, there are a lot of Leafs fans in Buffalo.
Sure.
Who are from Buffalo, who grew up watching Hockey Night in Canada.
Yep.
So yes, there's the faction of very anti-Leaf sentiment in Buffalo, the diehard Sabres fans. There are Leafs fans in Buffalo. And let's be honest, you wonder, if we're talking the Stanley Cup final, do some Leafs fans get in their car, try to get across the border and say, you know what, I'll quarantine the 14 days when I go home to see the Leafs win the Stanley Cup.
Wow. Listen, Mike, if I'm Brandon Shanahan, I want to play anywhere but Buffalo. Because if anybody ever looks at the Leafs record dating back to the early 70s in Buffalo,
where is that? Yeah.
It's like 30 wins and 1,000 losses, okay? And I'm exaggerating, but maybe not that much. And it's funny because even when the Leafs are good and you go down there, you go down to Buffalo and Buffalo doesn't have a very good team and they kick the Leafs butt, every time I drive back and I stop at customs, I'll say, so how many at the Peace Bridge? I say, so how many Leaf fans jumped off the bridge? And every time they'll shake their head and go, I don't know why these Leaf fans keep going to Buffalo, because they always come back all pissed off.
Well, so the other interesting thing, and just so we don't ignore the other Canadian teams, there might be a real push to, if it's Edmonton or Winnipeg, to play them in California. Simply because then you could probably, you might be able to do a doubleheader. It might be a time issue thing too. You may find ways that if you're better off playing Vegas versus Edmonton at Staples Center or in Chicago than you would be somewhere else because of time zone realities for television. And so you never know what the NHL and what the networks and the teams are going to think of. So we just don't want to say it's going to be Buffalo. It may be Buffalo if it's the Maple Leafs, but it may be another arena if it's something that's more advantageous time zone-wise and network-wise for the NHL.
Before we go, let me ask a question that I probably should know the answer to, but I don't. And that is, what are the proposed matchups for round three?
Point seedings. So yeah, still, that's why the importance of the regular 56 games. Points. So
all straight points?
Straight points.
1-4, 2-3?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Hmm. That's how you end up with east-west potential. If
one, yeah, four, you do.
Is east-west, it could happen.
Yep. Yeah. Well, in which case, forecasting where teams will play to try and get, as John suggested, early and late games may not even be possible because you can't really control. You know, the geography will be what it is, but that's going to be superseded by who plays who. Time is our enemy. We must off. Thank you, gentlemen, for this enlightening analysis of the day of trades. Let us promise not to do this for at least one more year.
Maybe next time in person, huh?
I think we said that last year. let's not go down that road yet. Mike and Mike, thank you, boys. See you soon.
Thank you.
Harrington and Zeisberger. We'll come back to wrap it up after these messages. McCowan and Shannon back to wrap it up. At the beginning of the program, John, I mentioned Murray's, I said Achilles, but it was an ACL. And of course,
the same letters, lots of the same letters.
Same letters, same leg too.
Yeah.
Just a different location in the leg.
Yeah, boy.
The impact is the same.
Yeah. Speaking of impact, Bob, who did you think won the trade deadline? We haven't heard your opinion.
I don't have any opinion whatsoever. I don't think I'm not capable of analyzing it. I really think it's mostly junk for junk. Wow. And you tweak and you, well, but it's not there.
I think
at the end of the day, either you have the players on your 20 whatever man roster at the time of the trade deadline or you don't, and the rest of the tweaking might win you a game somewhere along the line. And could that theoretically win you a Stanley Cup? Sure, but I think way too much emphasis is placed on this. And I know you're going to now point to a couple of cases.
No, I'm going to point
LA Kings, right?
I think one team this year did the what I would describe as the Butch Goring move. Got a guy that's going to be a difference maker. I think that's the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think Tampa Bay, in getting a defenseman, David Savard out of Columbus, they paid a huge price for it. But David Savard's a top four defenseman, and he's not playing 11 minutes. He's going to play 20 minutes tonight, and he's going to be a difference maker. And if he can stay healthy, and that's going to be the big caveat for everything in the hockey. David Savard has a really good chance of being on the Stanley Cup championship team this year with this trade.
You have left me not enough time to give you an argument, but I'll save it for another day, like tomorrow. Come back for that, ladies and gentlemen. Until then, for Shannon McCowan, have a good one.